Chapter 9. September 1888. The American Sentinel and the Woman's Christian Temperance Union. The Sentinel has had occasion frequently to criticize some of the workings of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union. Upon the part of those who favor the establishment of a religious instead of a civil government here, this fact has been made the means of an attempt to create prejudice at the expense of the Sentinel. They tried to make it appear that the American Sentinel is opposed to temperance. We propose to make plain our attitude toward temperance in general and toward the Woman's Christian Temperance Union in particular. The American Sentinel is thoroughly and consistently devoted to the genuine principles of temperance. And what the Sentinel considers to be the genuine principles of temperance can be stated in this single sentence, viz. Total abstinence from all stimulants and narcotics of whatever kind or nature or degree. More than this, it is out of allegiance to Christian principle that the Sentinel is devoted to this principle of temperance. It is thoroughgoing Christian temperance in which the Sentinel thoroughly believes. It is because allegiance to Christ demands that we shall be temperate in all things, that we advocate the principle of temperance. Both of the editors of the Sentinel are doing their very best to act strictly in accordance with this principle of temperance. It must therefore be manifest to every soul that the American Sentinel is decidedly in favor of temperance, and Christian temperance at that. And in this it must likewise be manifest to everybody that whatever criticisms we have ever made, or shall ever make, upon the workings of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union, are not in any sense in opposition to the purest principles of Christian temperance. Although we are decidedly in favor of Christian temperance, and endeavor personally to practice it, and to persuade others to practice it, we are not in favor of using the civil power to compel anybody either to favor or to practice it. And when the Woman's Christian Temperance Union attempts, as it does, to use the civil power to compel people to conform to the principles of Christian temperance, it goes beyond its legitimate province, it acts contrary both to civil polity and Christian principle, and therefore we oppose it. Christian principle knows no such thing as outward force. It never seeks either the support or the control of the civil power. Christian principle knows only the force of conscientious conviction, aroused to action by persuasive reason, under the blessed influence of the Spirit of God. Christian principle knows no power but the power of God as manifested in the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. Believing this with all our heart, although we are decidedly in favor of temperance, of Christian temperance, of Woman's Christian Temperance, and even of Woman's Christian Temperance Union, we are just as decidedly opposed to the political aspirations of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union. The Woman's Christian Temperance Union proposes to establish a theocracy in this country, and to that end demands that the ballot shall be put into the hands of women. Proof: a true theocracy is yet to come. Hence I pray devoutly, as a Christian patriot, for the ballot in the hands of women, and rejoice that the National Woman's Christian Temperance Union has so long championed this cause. Now the establishment of a man-made, or a woman-made, theocracy will be but a repetition of the establishment and working of the hideous principles of the papacy, if not the establishment of the papacy itself, in this country. The papacy is a theocracy. Its workings throughout history have been but the practice of the principles of a man-made theocracy. Such a theocracy as the Woman's Christian Temperance Union proposes to establish here by the ballot. The rule of such a theocracy is the wickedest rule that the world has known or can know. It puts man in the place of God, and deifies human passions. And such a crime is but one remove from that of Satan himself. Therefore, as such a theocracy is such a wicked thing, as it is such an utter perversion of every principle of government, we are entirely and everlastingly opposed to it. And as the National Woman's Christian Temperance Union is pledged to the establishment of such a theocracy, and rejoices that it has so long championed such a cause, we are entirely and everlastingly opposed to that part of the aims and workings of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union. And why should we be blamed for it? In order to the establishment of this theocracy here, they prayed devoutly for the ballot in the hands of women. But whenever the ballot is put into the hands of women, for any such purpose as that, then the ballot will be the worst thing that was ever put into the hands of a woman. Again, The Sentinel is first, last, and all the time, opposed to the aims of the National Reform Association. That association likewise proposes to turn this government into a theocracy, ruled by the leaders and teachers in the churches. It declares that dissenters from national reform opinions cannot dwell together on the same continent with the national reformed Christianity, and that there is nothing out of hell that should not be tolerated as soon as these. In Senator Blair's proposed National Sunday Law and Constitutional Amendment, both of which are now pending in the United States Senate, the national reformers see taken the first steps toward making effective their tolerant intentions. Now the Woman's Christian Temperance Union is the closest ally, and the most powerful support, that the National Reform Association has in this nation today. Many of the officers of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union are also vice presidents of the National Reform Association. It was the Woman's Christian Temperance Union that first started the petitions for this National Sunday Law, which pleases the national reformers so well, and which so fitly plays into their hands. And the union went before the Senate committee with the names of 1.5 million petitioners, and more to follow, in favor of that law which, in more than one of its provisions, is subversive of liberty, and which savors all over of tyranny. See the judicial decision, in another part of this paper. It is perfectly safe to say that from the position which she occupies, the present president of the National Woman's Christian Temperance Union, herself alone, is doing more to spread national reform ideas and principles than are all the national reform district secretaries put together. And there are other leaders of the union who are not much behind her in this bad accomplishment. Therefore, as we are totally opposed to the aims of the National Reform Association, and as the Woman's Christian Temperance Union is the most powerful support of that association, we are, consequently, totally opposed to that part of the workings of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union. And why should we not be? Nor is this all. We view with grave apprehensions the encroachments of the papal power, on its own part, upon the civil institutions of this government. Everybody knows that the papacy has never wearied of condemning our public schools because they are not made the medium of religious instruction. The National Reform Association and its allies now echoed a papal condemnation, and seek to remove the cause of it, by the pending amendment to the National Constitution, in which the national power is pledged to see that every state shall establish and maintain a system of religious public schools. Now to secure this and the cooperation of the papacy at the same time, the National Reform Association agrees that the Catholic Bible, and Catholic instruction, shall be established in the public schools wherever Roman Catholics are in the majority. And also in securing and enforcing the pending National Sunday Law, the national reformers pledge themselves to gladly join hands with the Roman Catholics, and to make repeated advances to secure the cooperation of the Roman Catholics in any form in which they may be willing to exhibit it. Therefore, the 2 points, the National Sunday Law, and religion in the public schools, upon which the Woman's Christian Temperance Union is diligently working to secure national religious legislation, are the very points upon which the National Reform Association stands pledged to unite with the papacy. Now the Woman's Christian Temperance Union supports the National Reform Association. The National Reform Association is pledged to Rome. Rome stands, pledged forever to the subversion of every principle of liberty. Therefore, as we are forever opposed to the encroachments of Rome, so we are forever opposed to that part of the working of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union which supports the National Reform Association, which is pledged to Rome. And why should we not be opposed to it? And why should not everybody else be opposed to it? We know that there are many of the women of the Woman's Christian Temperance Union who do not favor the political, nor the theocratical, nor the national reform aspirations of the leaders of the union. We know a number of women who have separated themselves from the workings of the union because of the very things which we have here pointed out. They joined the union to work for Christian temperance upon Christian principles, and to secure the practice of Christian temperance by Christian means. But when they saw that by the leadership of the union, political efforts and means were supplanting the Christian principles, efforts, and means, they left it. They did well to leave it. And so will every other woman do well to leave it, who does not want to be sold into the hands of Rome through the political, theocratical, and national reform aspirations of the present leadership of the National Women's Christian Temperance Union. We only pray that the whole body of the union, leadership and all, may awake to the danger of their position before they shall have delivered the civil power, and themselves and us all with it, into the hands of a religious despotism. The savor of tyranny. Senator Blair's National Sunday Bill declares that no person shall engage in any play, game, or amusement, or recreation, to the disturbance of others on the first day of the week, commonly called the Lord's Day, or during any part thereof. Some of the states already have the same sort of Sunday laws as this. California has no Sunday law, much less one of this kind. But not long ago the city of San Francisco had, on another subject, an ordinance of the same nature as this passage in the National Sunday Bill. San Francisco has no such ordinance now, however. The merit of the ordinance came up before the Superior Court, and the whole thing was treated with the contempt which all such statutes only deserve. The ordinance read as follows: No person shall in any place indulge in conduct having a tendency to annoy persons passing or being upon the public highway or upon adjacent premises. A man by the name of Ferdinand Pape was distributing some circulars on the street, which had a tendency to annoy somebody. He was arrested. He applied to the Superior Court for a writ of habeas corpus, claiming that the offense charged against him did not constitute a crime, and that the ordinance making such action an offense was invalid and void, because it was unreasonable and uncertain. The report of the case says, the writ was made returnable before Judge Sullivan, and argued by Henry Hutton in behalf of the imprisoned offender. Disposing of the question, the judge gave quite a lengthy written opinion, in which he passed a somewhat severe criticism upon the absurdity of the contested ordinance, and discharged Pape from custody. Said the judge, if the order be law, enforceable by fine and imprisonment, it is a crime to indulge in any conduct, however innocent and harmless in itself, and however unconsciously done, which has a tendency to annoy other persons. The rival tradesman who passes one's store with an observant eye as to the volume of business is guilty of a crime, because the very thought of rivalry and reduction of business has a tendency to annoy. The passing of the most lenient creditor has a tendency to annoy, because it is a reminder of obligations unfulfilled. The passing of a well-clad, industrious citizen, bearing about him the evidence of thrift, has a tendency to annoy the vagabond, whose laziness reduces him to a condition of poverty and discontent. The importunities of the newsboy who endeavors with such persistent energy to dispose of his stock, has a tendency to annoy the prominent citizen who has already read the papers, or who expects to find them at his door as he reaches home. He who has been foiled in an attempted wrong upon the person or property of another, finds a tendency to annoy in the very passing presence of the person whose honesty or ingenuity has circumvented him. And so instances might be multiplied indefinitely in which the most harmless and inoffensive conduct has a tendency to annoy others. If the language of the ordinance defines a criminal offense, it sets a very severe penalty of liberty and property upon conduct lacking in the essential element of criminality. But it may be said that courts and juries will not use the instrumentality of this language to set the seal of condemnation on unoffending citizens, and to unjustly deprive them of their liberty and brand them as criminals. The law countenances no such dangerous doctrine, countenances no principle so subversive of liberty as that the life or liberty of a subject should be made to depend upon the whim or caprice of judge or jury, by exercising a discretion in determining that certain conduct does or does not come within the inhibition of a criminal action. The law should be engraved so plainly and distinctly on the legislative tablets that it can be discerned alike by all subjects of the commonwealth, whether judge upon the bench, juror in the box, or prisoner at the bar. Any condition of the law which allows the test of criminality to depend on the whim or caprice of judge or juror savors of tyranny. The language employed is broad enough to cover conduct which is clearly within the constitutional rights of the citizen. It designates no border line which divides the criminal from the non-criminal conduct. Its terms are too vague and uncertain to lay down a rule of conduct. In my judgment, the portion of the ordinance here involved is uncertain and unreasonable. This decision applies with full force to Senator Blair's proposed National Sunday law. Under that law, all that would be necessary to subject any person to a criminal prosecution would be for him to engage in any sort of play, or game, or amusement, or recreation, on Sunday, because there are many of those rigid national reformers who would be very much disturbed by any such amusement or recreation, however innocent it might be in itself. And it is left entirely to the whim or the caprice of the disturbed one, or of the judge or jury, to say whether the action has really disturbed him or not. The California decision is that such a statute sets a very severe penalty of liberty and property upon conduct lacking in the essential element of criminality. California courts countenance no such dangerous doctrine, countenance no principle so subversive of liberty, or which so savors of tyranny. It is very likely that should Senator Blair's bill be enacted into a law, the United States courts would decide in the same way as did the Superior Court of California. But it is an exceedingly ominous sign, and one most startling in the danger which it displays, when a bill which so savors of tyranny, and which embodies a principle so subversive of liberty, can be introduced into the national legislature, can be received and reported favorably, can pass two readings, can be spread broadcast throughout the land, and only one single voice, that of the American Sentinel, be raised against it. The American people have so long enjoyed the liberty, which has been justly their boast, that they seem, from appearances, to think that now they can lie down safely and hibernate undisturbed for all time to come. We wonder what can ever awaken them. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. But corrupted freemen are the worst of slaves. The national establishment of the Christian religion. That amendment to the national constitution that has been offered by Senator Blair, and which is now pending in Congress, is a singular sort of a document, though hardly any more so than was to be expected in the promotion of the scheme which underlies it, that is, the establishment of a national religion. The proposed amendment is just about as flatly self-contradictory as any proposition could be. Section 1 reads as follows: No state shall ever make or maintain any law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The first sentence of Section 2 reads as follows: Each state in this Union shall establish and maintain a system of free public schools adequate to the education of all the children living therein, between the ages of 6 and 16 years, inclusive, in the common branches of knowledge, and in virtue, morality, and the principles of Christian religion. That is to say, no state shall ever make or maintain a law respecting an establishment of religion. But every state in this Union shall make and maintain laws establishing the principles of the Christian religion. And to make assurance doubly sure, Section 3 declares that the United States shall guarantee to every state, and to the people of every state and of the United States, the support and maintenance of such a system of the free public schools as is herein provided. And that is to say that the United States government pledges itself that every state shall establish and maintain the principles of the Christian religion. This proposed amendment therefore, at one stroke, establishes Christianity as the national religion, because it declares that every state shall maintain the principles of the Christian religion in the public schools, and the nation is pledged to see that this is done. Therefore, there must be a national decision of some kind declaring just what are the principles of the Christian religion. Then, when that decision shall have been made, every state will have to receive from the nation just those principles of religion which the nation shall have declared to be the principles of the Christian religion, and which the nation will have pledged itself shall be taught in the public schools of every state. In other words, the people of the United States will then have to receive their religion from the government of the United States. Therefore, if Senator Blair's proposed amendment to the national constitution does not provide for the establishment and maintenance of a national religion, then no religion was ever established or maintained in this world. But how shall this national decision be made as to what are the principles of the Christian religion? It would seem that the second sentence of Section 2 makes provision for this. It declares that no instruction or training shall be given in the doctrines, tenets, belief, ceremonials, or observances peculiar to any sect, denomination, organization, or society, being, or claiming to be, religious in its character. Nor shall such peculiar doctrines, tenets, beliefs, ceremonials, or observances, be taught or inculcated in the free public schools. As therefore no religious tenets, doctrines, or beliefs can be taught in the schools, except such as are common to all denominations of the Christian religion, it will follow inevitably that there shall be officially called a national council of the churches to decide what are the principles common to all, and to establish a national creed, which shall be enforced and inculcated by national power in all the public schools in the United States. And that will be but the establishment of a national religion. And that is exactly what Senator Blair's constitutional amendment assures, so surely as it or anything similar to it shall ever be adopted. And that is what the national reformers intend shall be. It was in this way precisely that the thing was worked in the 4th century. Constantine made Christianity the recognized religion of the Roman Empire. Then it became at once necessary that there should be an imperial decision as to what form of Christianity should be the imperial religion. To effect this, an imperial council was necessary to formulate that phase of Christianity which was common to all. The Council of Nice was convened by imperial command, and an imperial creed was established, which was enforced by imperial power. That establishment of an imperial religion ended only in the imperious despotism of the papacy. As surely as the complete establishment of the papacy followed, and grew out of, that imperial recognition of Christianity in the 4th century, just so surely will the complete establishment of a religious despotism after the living likeness of the papacy, follow, and grow out of, this national recognition of Christianity provided for in the constitutional amendment proposed by Senator Blair, and which is now pending in Congress.